Recorded live at 1BBSCon on August 26th through 29th, 1993, in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tape number BB17, Privacy and Censorship, with David Johnson.
Welcome to the session on privacy and censorship. We're scheduled to last an hour, and we hope to get a lot of time for questions from the audience and so forth. So we'll start off by asking each of the panelists to speak briefly about these two issues. We have a distinguished set of panelists at the far right. Dan Linton, who was identified earlier as the big SysOp, the largest system among those that count, software creation. We have Lance Rose, who is the author of SysLaw, who you know from this morning as well. Larry Wood, of the Graphics Forum on CompuServe. Bill Schneck, of lawyer with Prodigy Services, which would be biggest, I guess, if it did count. And I'm David Johnson, a lawyer in Washington with Wilmer Cutler and Pickering, but also a SysOp starting a new service called Council Connect, which is designed to bring all lawyers together in a single area in cyberspace, and we promise not to let them out. I didn't set the name for this session, and so we spent some time puzzling why the two issues were put together. One possibility is that there was a substantive relationship, and I ran across the following quote from a Wall Street Journal piece. The right to control information about you implies a right to control the speech of others. A vague, unlimited right to privacy can become an excuse for censorship. So there is a possibility that we will tie these two issues together in some important substantive way as the discussion proceeds here. But another theory is simply that privacy and censorship are the two vaguest terms the law has to apply in these areas, and they're the subject of the most complaints from end users. So it may be that we'll talk about these issues just from the standpoint of there being continual trouble spots in the online world. Obviously, privacy is a good thing, and censorship is probably a bad thing, but the key problem is figuring out what they really mean. And I want to just take a few minutes to also set some background in terms of how we talk about this, because it's important not to mix different kinds of questions together. One thing we could talk about a little bit, but I think it's not so much of interest on a day-to-day basis, is privacy and censorship as applied to the government. Obviously, we have constitutional amendments that deal with the government's duty to honor privacy if it attempts to search. And there may be some interesting questions about what to do when the government comes to your door as a SysOp and asks to see records or communications. But for the most part, the continuing issues you have to deal with have to do with the privacy expectations of users as against you as a SysOp. Similarly, we have First Amendment rights against censorship by the government. But again, the controversy in the online world most often has to do with what role can be played by the SysOp in screening and limiting the kinds of materials that come up in a given area. The sources of privacy rights, I'm sure you're generally familiar with, and they include the Electronic Communications Privacy Act in the federal statutory realm. There's some state tort law, and most importantly, though, contractual undertakings between SysOps and users. Just by way of general background, when the Electronic Communications Privacy Act was passed, the central idea underlying the language there was to leave it up to the system operator to decide what messages on the system would be treated as private and what would be publicly available. Well, because it was recognized that when you engage in online data communications, you need a whole range of different expectations that apply to different kinds of messages. So far, the federal law, at least, has been very much one that permits SysOps to establish different regimes. That carries with it, of course, a duty on the part of the system operator to make clear what the rules are. And the disputes that arise with end users have a lot to do with failure, clearly, to communicate what the rules are and disappointed expectations. I think the same thing is true of the censorship issue as against the role played by SysOps. That is, the existing law allows a very large degree of latitude with regard to what a SysOp can do to filter out particular kinds of content, maybe even terminate users who post things that are unacceptable from the standpoint of the system operator. But there may be a critical need to be clear about what those undertakings are, both from the standpoint of not having surprises for end users who come across materials that they wish had been censored, if you will, and not to have objections raised by those who assume they had a freer right to post to the system. So with that background, I'd like to start down at the far end of the table with Dan Litton and ask each of the members of the panel to simply reflect with us a bit on concrete examples and principles that ought to govern the approach of SysOps to both privacy and censorship, and then we'll open as quickly as we can to questions from the audience.
A lot of you might be wondering what the SysOps Software Creations might be doing on a privacy and censorship panel. I don't have a lot to do with law, or I've never been a lawyer, or I've never even done much with contracts, to tell you the truth. But we have a very unique position in the BBS world whereby my board was grown, as a lot of you know, by basically being the home board for developers and producers of software, exactly what I started off doing myself, publishing software. This poses a very unique situation over the last couple of years. It's helped the board to grow in popularity to a high degree. But what it's also posed is some very interesting situations. And I'll give you an example of this. We're the home BBS system for Apogee Software. And Apogee Software also has developers conferences and beta conferences on our board. Wolfenstein, Duke Nukem, Cosmo, a lot of their very popular games were developed on our board in that developers conference. They'll have their authors log in there. They'll have their graphics people, storyline people. They all log in there. We're also the home board for Epic Mega Games, another very big leader in software of this very same type. Apogee and Epic compete against each other, and basically Epic has their own developers. We have two more companies, id, which were the producers of Wolfenstein and Goodbye Galaxy, that Apogee marketed for them, is now going off on their own with a new game called Doom, and they'll be producing that themselves, so they've kind of broken away from Apogee in that sense. We also have another company called Gamer's Edge, and they're a division of Soft Disk Publishing down in Louisiana, who is a very big company, and a lot of the guys that started id came from Gamer's Edge. What's really interesting is the mix here now, because some of the guys from id have gone to Apogee. The president of id was hired by Epic Mega Games this year and is helping them become very successful. So now we have developers conferences and beta conferences for Epic Mega Games, for id, Gamer's Edge, and we have all of their developers, their authors, their graphics people coming into the same board. This poses a very critical situation when it comes to privacy. So what we've basically done is we've created them all private conferences that they can use, and we've really haven't created any contracts or anything like that. What we do is we monitor the message bases, and I basically have to make sure that on the main board, when a lot of their customers come in, we don't have one bashing the other. We keep it on a very professional level. A lot of the authors and a lot of the developers will go off into the particular conference that's private to only them, and they'll use that. We have had situations with the beta conference that I've had to resolve, however, where we'll have people that come in to be beta testers want to beta test for both companies or several companies. I've had to put a stop to that on our system for the simple reason that we can have them going into one board, one message base, reading all the threads about the new software coming out from one company, then jump right out of there and get it in, go into the next beta conference and start talking about it in there. So we've stopped that basically from happening on the system. I have another unique situation whereby I'm probably the only SysOp that I have several conferences that I won't go into myself. I also do development, and Software Creations has a software team where we have authors, we produce games, we have 30 of them out, and we've got them at Kmart, Walmart, Sears, that sort of thing. So at some degree, our games are quite different from the other people's that are on my system. However, there is a certain level of privacy that I still have to keep myself. And a lot of times, I do not go near the message bases in those developer conferences as far as Epic Mega Games or Apogee is concerned. and a lot of my co-sysops will handle things in those conferences. But I found that the way that this works the best is that you have to be 100% honest. You can't pull any funny business. You can't let anybody else pull any funny business. And if you see somebody getting hurt or something that looks like it's not going to be right, you correct it immediately, because it will come back around again. So many people have said to me, how in the world do you get all these competing companies on the same board? Well, that's basically how we do it. We divide them all up and make sure that in the main public conferences, things are kept on the up and up as far as when they're talking about each other's products, they talk about them with respect. And it seems to have worked just fine so far. Doing things that way and having a copy of Lance Rowe's book in my hand is about all I've done in the way of staying out of trouble.
Lance, that sounds like a good segue to you.
Thank you. Can you hear me? How's this? I really like that point Dan made about doing things honestly and not doing funny business. I can tell you that as a lawyer, from time to time, if somebody asks me to help out because there's some bad situation on a bulletin board, it often is because a sysop did something in a screwy way and left a lot of things unresolved and left the situation ambiguous and left a lot of people mad. I think acting affirmatively and honestly and forthrightly, the way that you think correct, is a large part of the equation in the privacy and censorship question. I'm going to speak fairly rapidly because I don't want to take too much time, but I want to cover a little bit of stuff. Privacy and censorship, Dave and I were talking about why are these two things together as a subject here. I see them as two major facets of the sysop user power relationship. That's really what they have in common. If the sysop censors a user in the user's eyes or goes into violates their privacy in the user's eyes, the user is going to get upset or feel violated possibly. That's what I see them having in common. It's a power thing. The sysop gets to do it because they have the power, and how much of that power are they going to utilize before the user's complementary power to not go to that board gets exercised. One common cause of censorship is sysops who like to control things, and there's a certain amount of that. That's just the way it is. I don't like to frequent places where sysops are like that too much, and that's kind of you vote with your modem in that sense. I'm going to speak about very quickly about a couple of things that angles on this kind of thing that aren't often talked about, and basically a question of why are sysops censoring? Why are they maybe intruding on privacy? I see a major reason being the fear of liability. Sysops, I think rightly to some extent, think that if the wrong kind of message is left on their board, they could get in trouble. So they might want to censor that message, or at least censor in the user's eyes. They might want to remove it from public view so they are no longer at risk. This is going to create a motivation to censor, so to speak. I'll use censor non-pejoratively. I hope you understand that. It also equivalently puts a pressure on privacy. We have seen bulletin boards get in trouble for things that are passing unknown in email. This makes some sysops feel like I have to look at what's in email to feel comfortable. Without getting into the whys and wherefores of exactly how much you should or shouldn't be doing that, that concern, again, leads to attention in the area of privacy. The concern in general leads to a tendency to keep marginal materials off the system, to keep questionable materials off the system, and in the end becomes kind of a, slows down the free flow of information through systems. The other thing I wanted to mention, which really doesn't get much play at all, but I think is real important, and kind of became clear to me when the Steve Jackson case was decided. I imagine most of you are familiar that Steve Jackson was searched and seized by some government agents. His business, BBS, was taken, and they took a long time giving it back, and he was never charged with a crime. They thought that one of his employees was some kind of evil hacker sysop who was keeping bad stuff on his system. And he went back and sued the U.S. government later for doing that with the help of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and some other groups. And it ended up being decided that the government had done something wrong. One thing that the judge did was say that the rights of users on the system to their privacy had been violated when the bulletin board containing the messages, their messages, were taken by the police. What that means to me for this session is that there's a symbiosis here. Steve Jackson Games received some form of justice in his case against the government based on his users' rights to privacy in their email. Okay? It wasn't his privacy rights. It was the user's rights. But there was some that gave him an action against the government. Also, the users came in on a formal sense. And I see BBS as piggybacking on the privacy rights of the users. Part of your rights against the government are the user's rights against the government, and you get to share in those rights. By the same exact token, a lot of what CISOPs enjoy in terms of free speech rights piggyback on the free speech rights of users. There are metaphors for bulletin boards tossed around. A couple of very common ones are publisher and information distributor. When you're a publisher with a bulletin board, let's say you maintain a database, or if Dan is serving as the home board for some software, Larry serves does some publishing where he puts things online originally and deals with various image producers. In that regard, the BBS is a publisher and has its own free speech rights under the Constitution. But in a public forum area where users are discussing things with each other, and again, even in email, the free speech right of the bulletin board is derivative of the free speech right of the users of the bulletin board. It is as a distributor of the speech of others that the bulletin board gets its protection. I want to point this out because as much as I myself believe that the CISOP is the king of their castle, as Ralph Cramden might put it, there is a symbiotic effect in terms of dealing with the greater structure of free speech and privacy that we have in this country, and that it's not the CISOP can say, I'll give them the privacy I want to give them, I'll give them the free speech I want to give them, but you're actually shooting yourself in the foot if you take away too much, because your own rights derive from those. That's all I want to say right now.
As an administrator on the CompuServe Information Service, privacy and censorship is of a great deal of interest to me, both from my obligations to the company. I don't know how many of you are familiar with CompuServe setup, but basically I'm a private contractor. I contract with CompuServe to provide management services in several areas, graphics being the primary one. I have to be concerned with how CompuServe treats privacy and how they treat censorship. I also have to be concerned more from the level as a board operator. My graphics areas on CompuServe are operated as much as possible like you would operate your own board. Privacy becomes an issue with me more from the content that I have. Is there, being graphics oriented, is there an issue with privacy of anyone who happens to appear in a picture, which is converted to a GIF graphic and then appears on the board? Censorship is important to me, again, from the content point of view, because is this the sort of material that I choose to have on the board? What are the user's rights in regards to making this material public through my board? Where do the lines lie? Where my liability is involved, the members' rights to have this material sent out through our system, balance is what I'm here for today. I want to know where the lines are. I want to know what the board operators do in regards to content and how you deal with privacy around content and how you deal with censorship around the content that is sent in to you to go out through your board. So I'm here asking more questions than I am to answer. But in any case, I'm here to also answer any questions that I can in regards to the material that comes through our system.
Thanks. Yeah. As David pointed out, I'm a lawyer with Prodigy. Can you all hear me, by the way? I guess if you can't, you wouldn't answer. I have to lean over a little bit. Oh, thank you. At Prodigy, I deal both with our bulletin board issues and with privacy, so I guess this session was tailor-made for me. I had thought to speak mainly about censorship. It seems Prodigy tends to be associated with censorship. for some strange reason. It's one that I can't quite figure out. But in thinking about what to say about censorship, I realized there was a fairly basic question to address, which is, what is censorship? David mentioned it's one of the vaguer terms. It certainly is. It's certainly a negative word. People throw it around as an accusation. Is there anyone here who would say censorship is a good thing? Probably not. Again, it may depend on what your definition of censorship is. It may be a useful thing, as I'll explain, I hope. What we hear on Prodigy maybe all too often is that when people say censorship, they mean, you won't let me say what I want to say. You're limiting my expression. You're putting some limitation on me. And that much is true. We certainly do put limits on how people use the boards and what they can say. I would say this alone is not censorship. I mean, to be strictly technical, if you limit your callers to an hour a day, or you set up specific discussion areas where you expect them to focus on a subject, you're limiting what they can say. And I don't think anyone would say that is censorship by itself. It must go beyond that. The problem with trying to nail down censorship is that people seem to have different views of what censorship is. Different people would say different things. A lot of it depends on the context that it comes up in. A lot of it depends on users' expectations. If I run a board for political discussion, but I delete all the conservative bulletins, all the bulletins expressing a conservative viewpoint, and just leave the liberal ones, that sounds a lot like censorship. But if I announce that my board is for people with liberal viewpoints, and that's what it's there for, I think fewer people might say that's censorship. Certainly there'd be a number who say that's still censorship, but just that slight point of view, even if I'm deleting the same bulletin boards, might change some people's views. Something more from Prodigy's experience, if we have a bunch of bulletins that we delete because they're bashing Beverly Hills 90210, which seems to stir up a fair bit of passion, we delete them, that sort of sounds like censorship. But if these bulletins pop up in our bread baking area, again, that's not quite the same situation. And certainly, if you ask our bread bakers, they're going to say that's not censorship. That's another key issue. I mean, depending on which side of the so-called censoring you're on, you're going to say it is censorship, it isn't censorship. Obviously, the most of our complaints of censorship come from people whose bulletins have been removed or who have received some kind of a warning. Of course, you're going to be more vocal if you're the one who's affected. What's surprising, though, is we also seem to get a viewpoint that says, it's censorship if you touch my bulletins, but not only is it not censorship if you touch someone else's, I want you to touch those bulletins. I want you to keep the opposing viewpoint down. I want you, Prodigy, to step in there and cut them off. I don't think they're appropriate here. Apparently, there's been some research that's a common attitude in America in general, that we all believe in free speech for ourselves, and sometimes we're a little more hesitant when it's free speech for opposing opinions. Even where the view is not that extreme, what boils down to is that what's censorship for one person is just good board management for another. People say, what about freedom of speech? And of course, freedom of speech derives from the Constitution. The First Amendment is a limit on what government can do. Lance mentioned his belief that the CISOP is king of the castle with some limitation. I'm not aware of anything that limits the CISOP from saying, you can't say this, other than reality, which is if you put too much limitations on your system, as Lance points out, no one's going to use your system. People ask us at Prodigy, why do you even bother to censor? And that's maybe what sets us apart. Our members want us to. It's a business decision. They expect that our bulletin boards are going to be a known quantity. They expect that they're going to be safe for their kids, whatever that means. They expect that the information is going to be easy to find. They expect that the level of discussion is going to be civil and pleasant, you know, more or less. And so as a business matter, we're filling that need. I mean, certainly we're not the only game in town. Our members are free to vote with their modems, again, to use Lance's expression. And given that that's the case, given that there's so much else out there that they can do with their modems, why not set up the, I think this morning in the Internet 101 session, someone used the expression the virtual suburb, where you're safe from, I guess, the virtual inner city. Why not set up a virtual suburb where people have an expectation of being safe from whatever they feel they need to be safe from? We even did some research back in 92 and asked these our members, what do you think about the restrictions we put on our bulletin board? A clear majority said they're about right. A few more said they're not restrictive enough. And that's among our heavy bulletin board users. Among our light bulletin board users, it was about 75% who felt that way. That was a little surprising to us, but it does tell us that we're meeting a business need. Between that and the fact that we have 100,000 bulletins on average coming online every day, we need to put some controls in place. I'll just mention a few things on privacy and then relinquish the microphone. One important consideration for Prodigy in terms of privacy is being upfront, being honest, and setting an expectation. ECPA, as David mentioned, allows you to set up the scheme you want. This is private, this is not private. Prodigy has issued a written policy on privacy. If we're not unique on that, we're certainly in the minority. I have a handful of copies here if people want to see it, and I can certainly send copies to anyone who would like it. And addresses issues such as email, privacy. In fact, I'll just five main points. Email, privacy of your personal information. We have your name and address and account information. Do we give away mailing lists? Do we sell them to companies? No, we don't. We don't read hard disks, as the Wall Street Journal once reported. And just in general, we spell out what we will do with information that we keep about you. So in a nutshell, it's setting an expectation, then abiding by those expectations, which is key. I'll stop at that point and certainly be glad to take questions further down.
We'd like to take questions in just a minute. I have two other things I'd like to run quickly down the panel and ask about. I was struck by the distinction between censorship to, in this form of good board management, to create the area that, whether it's a suburb or whether it's everything in the world about a tropical fish and nothing else, that's one kind of censorship. But there was another mentioned, and that is censorship to avoid liability. Maybe Larry can tell us whether how much comfort CompuServe took from the Cubby versus CompuServe case, which analogized a CompuServe to a bookseller, in effect. But that, if for purposes of not holding it automatically liable for the contents of anything on its board, but that left open the question of whether if someone were to come to CompuServe and say, I've been harmed by an image in the system, or I have some other complaint, and demand that you take the image off, whether failure to censor at that point would still, in your view, create a serious risk of liability. And I particularly mention that point because I think it relates to the anonymity point. A year or two ago, there was a draft statute called the Electronic Communications Forwarding Act circulating around Washington that would have had the effect of creating a sort of common carrier immunity from liability for bulletin board operators without the obligation that common carriers have traditionally had of carrying all traffic. Traditionally, the telephone company and others who have to accept all carriage are given immunity by statute so that they're not worried at all about the fact that someone else may have sent something by mail or through their telephones that it creates a harm. That proposal foundered on an objection at the time that said, the only trade-off, what the proposal would have done would be to have given immunity to somebody who didn't alter the contents of a message, but who preserved the ability to identify who posted it, so that you were preserving the ability to track down some wrongdoer if a wrong had been done. And there was some component of the group discussing this objected that it was very important to preserve anonymous messaging. So I guess my question that I'd like the group to talk about briefly is whether you think there is a substantial risk of liability, whether you have to engage in censorship of some kind if you're a bulletin board sysop, and whether in fact the anonymity point, whether in fact it's important to preserve the ability to identify your users as part of your responsibilities.
Excuse me. Yeah. When discussing that, could you make a distinction between public and private messages, please?
Right. Okay, I'll start that off by saying this is a very interesting time for this discussion to come up for me because it's been within the last 2 weeks that I've probably had the hottest session in my main message base that I've ever had in the entire running of Software Creations. What's happened is a very nice young girl came in and posted a message about some law that was being enacted to allow pornography on television and wanted everybody to basically campaign against it. Well, that, I don't have to tell you, started a whole bunch of comments back again from people saying, what's the matter, you don't have a switch on your TV and all this kind of stuff. It went on for a while, but then she basically posted a message after all the commotion. There was threads that went on for a while. They weren't too bad. I watched them for a while. They weren't too bad, and then what happened was she decided that she wasn't going to post any more messages on a bulletin board and left me a private message saying so. So I left her a message, and I said, there's nothing wrong with posting posting your feelings on the board. I basically tried to tell her that she needed to be a little more thick-skinned and let people say what they feel. I said, I don't feel anybody should be attacking anybody else on a board. You can't make anybody think the way you want them to think. You can post what you believe about something, but don't tell somebody else they have to go by it. Let them take the data in and basically try to understand it themselves. So what I've done is, even with my co-sysops, we've had people come in and flame before, swearing at us on the message basis for something that they didn't understand. The first rule of thumb at Software Creations with all my co-sysops is that I don't care what anybody says to you, you diffuse the situation. You immediately go in there with a very professional message, explain to them where they might have gone wrong, not telling them they were wrong, but just explaining that maybe we were wrong because we didn't post it in a way they could see it or something like this. You will be amazed at the amount of people that have come in swearing at us for something they didn't understand and turned out to be members later. Now, as far as the private messages are concerned, the way that I had a lot of people saying on my board, and during that whole conversation, I had a guy, while we were going on about what should and shouldn't be on TV and pornography and sex and all this stuff, I had a guy come in and post a public message that said, you've probably read my script by now and know that I'm gay. How do you feel about that? And I had a lot of my users answer it before I got a chance to. And basically what it came down to was, wherever a direct attack was made, I took it private immediately and I addressed it to me. Then I sent back a message to that person explaining our stance on the system, that they are not to attack another user. They can post their feelings or their views about a certain situation, but it's not to be a direct attack on the user. So that's a case where I have censored, I've taken the message private, I've changed who they actually addressed it to, and I've had very good luck. The threads have worked fine after that. That particular thread seemed to calm down. And everybody was happy after that and just felt that it was more of a professional board and that they really liked it. So we didn't have any real serious problems there.
I agree with those comments. I think that every sysop has to decide what kind of system they want to run. And that's the management aspect, as David referred to it. Some people want to run free speech boards, which is okay. Some people don't want to have a tax. Some people don't think that's the thing to do, is to have a tax. There's a system I go on fairly regularly where people will call each other any kind of name you care to mention. There's really no rule against calling people whatever you want. There's another system that I've been involved with where the rule about, you know, what messages are going to get handled and what aren't is, don't be a horse's ass. That's to the users. Which is a pretty global kind of explanatory principle. I'm going to speak very, very briefly about legal aspects, which are probably, well, some people think the more, some people think the less interesting. First of all, I think a lot of this stuff depends on whether you're dealing with a contract situation with your users or not. If you have a contract that does the trick, that does the right kind of thing, you're going to have less to worry about. You're going to have users who agree to be responsible for their own stuff, and you're going to have users agree that you're not responsible for what other users do, up to a certain, pretty far point. Because we always have to remember that the user is the one primarily responsible for a bad message, not the sysop. If you have 500 users, you have not now become the keeper of 500 users. The biblical allusion there. That's one thing. Second thing is, I think it's pretty clear that if you get decent information that there's something wrong with a posting, whether or not you monitor, whether or not anything, if there's a specific problem, if somebody brings to you a specific problem, a specific message, you do have to act on that legally. You have been given notice that there might be some, I mean, you might look at it and say there's no problem at all, but you have to at least look. You have to at least take that step at that point. Then the question is, are you going to monitor? That's really up to you. I don't want to get into the, you know, all the details of that. That's actually pretty complicated, and you end up choosing your, well, you're choosing your meal or choosing your poison or however you want to do it. It's pretty complicated. I do think that there are times when it's just good sense to censor, so to speak, to take things off the system. Somebody says, hey, there's a, I mean, something that's happening a lot, there's a program called PGP, Pretty Good Privacy, and there's a guy, this is all pretty well publicized in certain areas, there's a company that's running around telling everybody who has it on their system, take it off or you're going to be liable for patent infringement. So the thing gets on systems, it gets off pretty fast. And, you know, you basically have to protect yourself. You don't have to take up somebody else's cause in terms of having something posted up there that might be illegal, unless you have to believe that cause yourself. In terms of privacy, because you wanted these things separately addressed, I'm going to give you my personal feeling about that, which is that SysOps should respect user privacy. That was part of the point I was trying to make before when I was talking about symbiosis and piggybacking on user rights. Again, this is only my personal feeling, that a SysOp, if you're going to give people email, let them have their email, but don't give them absolute privacy. Again, my personal feeling, because there might be situations where you've handcuffed yourself in a way that you might feel is going to make you go down in flames. And I don't think anybody needs to do that. I think the point, though, when you're going, if you're going to have any, if you're going to be involved in email at all, and most people will, is to have a policy up front where you tell the user what the situation is. You have total privacy if that, if you end up deciding to do that. You have no privacy. You have privacy except in situations A, B, and C. Just make it understood at the outset. People can't complain too much if you stay within those rules. If they participate in the system within that regime, and you act according to the rules that you yourself set out, users won't be able, you know, you'll basically, everybody agreed that's how it works. And if you want to look at someone's email because you said, yeah, that's a condition under which I can look at it, that's okay, because that's the deal. That's about it.
Again, as a SysOp with CompuServe, I can't really speak as to their comfort level with the Cubby versus CIS decision, although I swear I heard champagne corks popping 1,000 miles away. But over in the graphics areas, material coming to our attention, which is challenged in any way, shape, or form, has to be dealt with. As Lance made mention, anything that's brought to your attention, there's a high responsibility for you to take some action, I believe. As an example, any image that comes under challenge, either from a copyright point of view or a content point of view, is immediately removed from public view until we can evaluate the situation and determine exactly what our level of responsibility is in regards to that image. Our message bases over in the vendors forums, there's a big game going on. Diamond bashing is the real popular one today. A few weeks ago it was ATI. The vendors take a lot of heat from members. Where the SysOps responsibility lies as far as moving messages out of public view, in my opinion, only comes to play when they're getting at a point of personal attacks. And then I still expect the vendor to deal with them, but in a more private area. The one thing about what we're calling censorship or monitoring or whatever label you want to put on it, I think what I've learned with Lance as my attorney, is that the more of this I do, the more responsibility I have to do more of it. This, I think, is a real important issue for SysOps. You have to deal with these issues consistently. You cannot monitor messages so-so this week and next week just let it go. Again, in the image arena, you'll have two photographers issue images which, in their opinion, are about the same quality or the same content level. We may choose not to make one public. The other will challenge on the basis that the two are equal. These become business decisions. And I think the important thing is, as Lance said, is to set the rules out up front. Tell the members what you expect them to do, tell them what you're going to do, and then hold to the plan as consistently as possible.
As far as private messages go, we have announced that private mail is absolutely private, with the very limited exception set up in the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which
consent and security and that kind of thing.
Yeah, routine maintenance. If you happen to come across them, obviously you can't use that as an excuse, but they're quite limited. In that context, it's almost impossible for us to know that something is going on in private email. So we would just say that there's no way that we could be liable for it because there's no connection to our company knowledge, if you will. Public bulletin board messages are obviously another situation. I think the CompuServe case certainly left the law wide open. As I understood it, the court found that since CompuServe itself basically had no idea what was going on as to the specifics, they had no place in this lawsuit. What happens with someone like Prodigy, who tends to know more of what's going on the bulletin boards, is still an open issue. We're kind of walking a fine line. We're almost trying to develop a new legal position rather than relying on analogies to publishing. Given the volume of our boards, or I guess the volume of any bulletin boards, we'd like to think it's a reasonable position to say that even though you enforce rules and you're conscious of what's on the bulletin board, that alone is not enough to hook you with liability. It's not a very solid position to be in, but we think it's an appropriate one given the nature of bulletin boards. One of the things we are trying to develop a policy on says that if you've got a problem with this guy's bulletin, you come on and answer this guy's bulletin. One of the areas where we see this most often is in our financial discussions, where I guess people have money at stake as opposed to simply their own feelings. We will get complaints from companies. So-and-so is bad-mouthing my company, and I don't like it. Do something about it. We're not in a position to determine if this guy's report of the company is true or false. We'll go back to the company and say, come on, give your side of the story. Very often, other members will already be doing that, but if you're concerned about what's happening here, come on over. We'll send you some software. We'll get you online, however we can. It's a dicey thing. In some cases, people don't have the ability to come online, so as I say, we're still working on that. I'll just mention one more item. I don't know how many of you have heard of the Medphone lawsuit. This is a lawsuit that doesn't involve Prodigy directly. We're not a party. But what happened, again, in our financial area is a fellow named Peter DeNigris started putting some unfavorable comments about a company whose stock was in the process of declining. The stock continued to decline. The company sued him, claiming that his bulletins were a principal cause for the continued decline of the stock. The suit is still pending. It's still in the discovery phase, so it's a ways to go before anything is resolved here. Since Prodigy is not a party, this lawsuit won't necessarily resolve anything from the SysOps point of view, but it's certainly worth knowing about. Eventually, the lawsuit will come along. Odds are we will be the defendant. We'll see what happens at that point.
We're considering taking our board where private messages anywhere on the board are 100% private. The security level is greater than even SysOps can see it. Our two concerns are libel and illegal messages. Obviously, they're brought to our attention by one of the two parties. That's one thing. But what if one sender talks about credit card numbers to another, and it's private, so we never see it? Is there any liability on our part?
There shouldn't be. The concern, I can't give you absolute black and white, so there aren't court cases on this yet, okay? My personal feeling is that there shouldn't be liability. My concern is that there are other things that happen with bulletin boards. In the state of education about bulletin boards in this country, there are still some policemen who think that a bulletin board is just something to grab when you feel like grabbing something. And so without you being charged with anything, without you being suspected of a thing, there's still the concern about your system being taken. Okay? I think it's like lightning striking. It doesn't happen very often. That's what did happen to the Steve Jackson Games company that I mentioned before. He ran a customer support board. I guess it was the Secret Service. I think it was the Secret Service, I'm not positive. Thought, with the aid of some telephone company people, thought that there was some stolen telephone company data sitting on his bulletin board. Had nothing to do with what Steve Jackson was doing. He has a role-playing game company. they just went in and took his board anyway. Now, there's that level of stuff that you're not going to be liable, okay? And I'm not saying this to, you know, sound scary or anything, but if you want the whole picture, I think your liability is at a minimum if you give people that, level of privacy. You're not, no one's going to bring you into a lawsuit and say you're the bad guy. That doesn't make your system 100% safe, just in case there's something going on. I think if you hear that hackers, the evil kind, the new version of hack, you know, the definition of hackers, are crackers, that's not really accepted either, but whatever they are. If you hear that they're passing credit card numbers to each other, I think you have something to be concerned about. How you go about it, you could say, look, I hear this is going on, would you let me look at your email? Or look, I hear this is going on, could you talk to me about it? I mean, you got to deal with it in a human situation, common sense. But again, I think your liability, you're pretty safe. Again, there's no cases, so, you know, we're working in a vacuum, but it doesn't 100% insulate you against seizure because the cops happen to think your system is somebody else's bad stuff is going on.
We're actually there with one question, which is whether in the course of doing that, you've taken any steps to eliminate the ability to trace messages if, in fact, there were some law enforcement interest in messages on your system, because I think that would create an additional risk for you. You cannot rely on some supposed law that makes it illegal for you to look at messages. It's very important to realize that ECPA bans the disclosure of messages on public bulletin boards by SysOp without consent, but it does not, it allows inspection and access to messages on whatever basis the SysOp allows. So to the extent that your action is making messages not only non-accessible but also non-traceable contributes to some harm down the road, and if you had any inkling of that and contributed to it, I think that, as Lance suggests, does create some
level. When you say non-traceable, that would mean that we allow anonymous names.
For example, yeah.
Right. If we don't do that, we always stick with real names that they, you know, we tell people you have to give us your real name, that sort of thing. We're safer in that
area. Safer, sure.
Well, yeah. just think like let's say you have a run a hotel, and everybody knows that the place is rife with prostitution and drug dealing and everything else. You just don't happen to look at what goes on there, but you know full well what you've enabled to happen. You will be held, there's a very good chance you will be held responsible for what's going on there, for allowing that condition to take place, either knowingly or having reason to know, even if you wouldn't admit you knew. So you have to consider that level of stuff. I think it's really a fringe concern here. I don't want to overstate the importance, but you know, that's kind of what we're talking about, I think.
Well, in our case, we would make off-site backups, particularly for the seizure case, we would go back on the airplane. What about then in public messages in the case of libel? Obviously, illegal as you can't allow. What about libel, though? For one user, libels another one.
I think that's a question of whether you find out about it and how quickly you act.
Public messages.
I mean, if somebody says, hey, somebody's libeling me, and you're the only guy who can do anything about the message, and you kind of just let it sit there for a week or two, you're asking for it.
So the public messages regarding libel, SysOps have to maintain diligence.
There's a monitoring question. I mean, we have to ask other people. We have to let other people talk. There's a monitoring question. How fast did you find out about it? Did somebody tell you, or were you monitoring? That's a whole different question.
Right in the back.
Yes, with that same respect, once you implement any sort of editorial policy at all, how do you protect yourself against liability?
What? Lawyers? No, it's not absolutely up in the air. It's not absolutely up in the air.
So are you asking how to protect the SysOp, or how can the user protect themselves?
No, how can the SysOp be protected in cases of libel and slander where, say you miss a message, say you're not a lawyer, say you don't know everything that is involved in the libel and slander and so forth, and what might actually be illegal?
Insofar as your question suggested that you've got some protection as long as you don't ever intervene, I don't think that's right. I think you have a duty of care and everybody has a duty of care that depends on what level of protection, what level of action is reasonable, the size of the risk presented. The Soldier of Fortune case stands for the proposition that you have to exercise a reasonable amount of care. But there are things you can do. You can engage in a regular review of what's on, a consistent review of what's on the system. You can react to different messages differently. I think the Prodigy solution of giving people an opportunity to reply is a good, innovative thing that helps to make the case that you've done what's reasonable under the circumstances. Yeah.
Let me raise this one level. What about encryption? You've raised this issue. You have a right to maintain this and so on, a responsibility to do it. What if I start communicating with someone and it's encrypted?
The same question.
And then to take that one step further, what if with the current controversy the government decides that encryption is illegal unless it's the encryption that they approve of?
You just answered your own question on the second part.
Sorry?
You just answered your own question on the second part. If it's illegal, you can't let it be on your board.
Okay, answer the first part. It's not illegal at the present time, but I decide to encrypt messages that I'm sending through on a board.
Well, I think that's the functional equivalent of the Prodigy decision to say that there is an area on our board that is for private mail, and we won't look at it.
If I encrypt it, I make it really private.
I understand.
The law recognizes liability only when you've got a duty to do something and you don't meet that duty. If you don't know what these messages are, it's hard to argue that you've got a duty to do something about them.
Yeah, it really relates to his question. He's talking about voluntarily not looking. You're talking about the user keeping the SysOp from looking.
Right.
But it's a very similar situation. The SysOp is not seeing, and there's something keeping him, either his own principal or the encryption.
Would you be bothered by someone using encryption?
I think if your board is connected to the internet, and if you know that somebody is downloading an encryption algorithm into an international surveillance, and you know that you might be willfully enabling the export of an encryption algorithm in violation of the munitions code, whatever you might think of that law, you might think about trying to get that to stop.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a good point with that, because I have a lot of people worldwide that communicate each other on software creations with different languages. We have every language you can imagine goes through there in the message bays, and a lot of times in private mail back and forth to each other. I don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, I don't think Prodigy would be concerned as a legal matter if people were using encryption. There's the sort of the business editorial matter of what do the other people who are paying us think about that. But that as a legal matter, no problem.
On private mail, is it illegal for SysOp to read private mail?
I think the answer to that is, under federal law, the answer to that is no. But you are very well advised to have a policy that makes clear the extent to which you will do that, and to be able to show that insofar as you are doing it, that your users know that you will and have consented to it. There may be contractual issues if your users are led to understand that you will not access any messages for any reason, for example, and that's a separate civil risk.
So it's not considered as like the mail or the mail system?
Well, if you offer electronic communication services to the public, you may not disclose the contents of messages going through your system to others. But your question is whether it's unlawful to look. And what the federal statute says is that you cannot access a communication system without authority. And one of the reasons in which you can access it is that you have authorization from the person providing the electronic communication service, which is you. So it comes deliberately in a circle. It says the ground rules of the system are set by the SysOp. If you violate your own ground rules, that might be a violation. And certainly if others do so, that's a violation of federal law. There may be state statutes that affect that, but fundamentally, SysOps have reasons to look at messages, and the federal law deliberately carved out the ability to create public areas and to create a SysOp ability to engage in security kinds of activities.
You mentioned something about not disclosing private communications. What about the event of a disclaimer when you're logging into the system, or it's out there, it's posted, but the SysOp has the right to change the status of a message from private to public when it's appropriate to do so. That's posted on our system. While we've never done it, I've never seen the need to do it. It is posted there. What are your thoughts?
I would ask who the message was to. You're talking about moving something from private to public. The traditional rule is that someone who has received the message has the right to republish it, whether or not that's consistent with the
understandings or the contracts, again, is a separate question. So as a recipient of a message, you, the SysOp, might have a legal right to republish it, but you might get some users very upset if you did that.
Can you summarize the question for the tape so that we know what...
Sorry, yeah.
The question was, can we summarize the questions for the tape?
Are there significant differences between the laws of libel and the laws of slander? And if so, has there been any case law as to whether or not what occurs online is printed form and therefore libel, or spoken form, therefore slander?
Okay, well, I'll take a first stab at this. I'm not a past master at this area of law. I have a decent familiarity with it. My understanding is that those traditional categories, libel having to do more with printed media, slander having to do more with oral statements, are now kind of dealt with under one term called defamation. Libel, they used to have somewhat different laws, which I'm not entirely conversant with, but the... although they had to do with printed versus oral media, it also had to do with the distribution. Libel tended to be much wider distributed because it was in print and newspapers and whatnot. Slander tended to be right there and whoever was standing around. Yeah, so what's going on in a bulletin board is probably more like libel because there's a lot of people there, because it tends to get distributed. The traditional categories aren't what they used to be. And they certainly are legal. There's a whole legal structure to lawsuits having to do with libel, slander, defamation, whatnot, and the First Amendment is strongly involved. Was there a further refinement of the question?
Okay.
I have a question. First of all,
John,
Tom Kissir, thank you so much for the policy and then just to go down the road. Paul talked about, I think Lonzo was saying that you could take a spectrum, you know, what you want as far as your own personal opinion, which policy you would have.
CompuServe has some very general standards by which all contractors to them must adhere to, naturally. In regards to content, that's my decision. As the forum administrator, I formulate policy on the material that I'm comfortable with. CompuServe has always taken a position that they're simply the conduit through which information and data flows. For a long time, I wasn't comfortable with that. I thought they ought to have a little more liability for content than that, but I've come to change my mind, and I believe that as an independent contractor, with them not exercising day-to-day management control over my area, that they should be able to stand aside more or less in that position of just being the conduit. But in regards specifically to all three of the areas that I operate, not only the graphics forums, but tourist information in the Florida forum and cooking information in the cooking forum, I set the policies on the content that will be permitted in the area. I also make the final decisions case by case. I think it's fine to have all these policies, and I think it's absolutely imperative that we lay the rules out to the members, whether that's through a contract that you have with an individual member or just some guidelines that they can go by. I think it's important they know where you're coming from on what you want on your board. Rules are fine, but there are going to be cases that just have to be decided then. There's gray areas, and I think you should be willing to come out in public view and absolutely discuss with your members why you've made a particular decision in a particular arena. Give you one of the classic examples in my area. We have models. We have lingerie, swimsuit models, some nudity permitted. I'm always challenged to provide more male nudes. I'll be glad to provide male nudes if the uploaders upload them. I mean, I make material public according to the material that I receive, as long as they're within very specific guidelines. And our guideline is simply no genitalia will be displayed, male or female, period. What do you do if you get in an image that's a three-quarter view? There's going to, you lay the rules out up front, and then if there's something that comes close, you sit there and make a decision and be willing to publicly defend the decision you made. Right? But again, in answer to your question, no, CompuServe does not day-to-day manage our forms.
The question was what others would adopt as their policies, and I guess Bill set forth his on privacy, setting up a bulletin board for lawyers to use where one of the possibilities is private email. Obviously, Council Connect would vigorously fight to preserve the privacy of any given message, because if it didn't, then the user sending the message would be subject to a claim that they waived the privilege by the lawyer-client privilege or by using that forum. I wanted to ask, though, are you sure who the member is with whom you have that contract at all times? We're seeing increasing cases of employers paying for accounts on public bulletin boards for employees, and then the question arises whether the employer comes to you later and says, we'd like access to that former employee's messages. Do you have a view on whether the employer was the who paid the bill for the service is the party to whom you have an obligation? Do you worry about that kind of split? And do you worry about the Workplace Privacy Act that's pending in Congress?
For us, that's an easy one. Our agreement with our members states that our agreement is only with the individual. If the individual and their employer want to duke it out, that's between them. But as far as we're concerned, we're dealing strictly with the individual. Even if the check comes on the employer's check stock, that contract we treat as being signed by the individual, and that's the end of it.
One question.
I think
it's
this
lawsuit that's been at some point, obviously, people could have discussion on your board about a company and have a problem with software. Now you say it can impact your sales. But obviously, whether it's factual or not, you don't know. I mean, do you have to worry at some point that you have to basically limit discussions about corporations that because of this lawsuit?
Well, as I said,
you see what I'm saying? You don't know whether it's factual, obviously. And
the question was whether we need to limit discussion since we don't know the truth or falsity behind the individual messages. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean,
As I said, we're trying to take ourselves out of that role and hope that the law will support us when push comes to shove. There's just no way for us to determine the truth or falsity. We had one case where a company sent in a stack of securities registration documents, about 3 inches worth, and then said, read this and you'll see it's truth or false, that these messages are false. We sent them back and said, no, we don't do that. And as I said, whether the law supports us in that or not is an open issue.
The stock analysts do this every day.
Right.
All over the country, you watch stocks of ITT or Motorola. You can watch an analyst give a thing and watch a stock drop billions in one day, and he's not held personally liable, and that's his opinion.
Yeah, one of the points we try to get across to our members is that this kind of communication is really no different than any other kind of communication. And you've got to understand, if you could be held liable for it out in the quote-unquote real world, you can be held liable for it here. And between taking ourselves out of the role of judge and jury and educating our members, we hope to leave ourselves without having to make those decisions.
The other thing that you can do, to that note, I have a lot of members who leave mail on the board about the various companies that we have there. And they will make comments, both negative and positive comments. I direct all those comments to be either truthful or good, one of the two. Like, for instance, if somebody comes on and says, well, this certain game is junk, right, then we'll come back and basically tell them why. You know, tell us if you found something broken. If it's broken, we let them say it in public, but it's got to be fact. They've got to say that. And that's like with your stock market case. That stock isn't going down or up because somebody's saying, well, this company is junk. They're reporting some fact on that company that may be true. So basically try to keep them to the facts if you can. If they really think they have a problem, have them explain that problem in detail to what it is.
We're supposed to end at 5:30. One more question, and then anyone who wants to stay around, I'm sure will be.
The question was, how does family law come into
the contract with our members, and particularly in Prodigy's case, when we allow up to 6 people on one account, if an adult is paying for a child through the MasterCard, or if one spouse is using a joint checking account or a separate checking account, the way our system is set up is that the first person to sign on is the responsible party. We call them the membership holder. They're the ones who hold the membership. They're the ones that we deal with from a contractual basis. So if Bill Schneck is the name that goes on that first account, Bill Schneck is the person that we consider having the contract. We're assuming that Bill Schneck is in fact the person typing at the keyboard who does that. If that's not the case, then perhaps it's no different than someone placing an 800 call and ordering merchandise under somebody else's name. And there's only so much you can do to verify. We also insist, require that that our membership holders be over 18 or of legal age in their state. And again, to the best that we can verify that, you know, it works for us.
Obviously, there are lots more questions, but we promised to break at 5:30. So thank you all for coming. And if some of you want to come up for some more, please do.